Startups grow in unpredictable ways, but your infrastructure shouldn't. Deel scales with you from employee one to employee 1,000. Deel's real-time payroll engine cuts weeks-long cycles down to minutes. And their global experts keep you compliant as you expand. Plus, startups can tap into perks like up to $25,000 in Deel credits and support programs designed specifically for high-growth teams. Deel is the fastest way to hire, manage, pay, and equip anyone, anywhere. Deel, your forever people platform. Visit deel.com/MOS to learn more and book a demo.
On Masters of Scale, we talk a lot about inflection points, those moments when a technology stops being optional and starts being fundamental. AI presents one of those moments, and behind every breakthrough, whether it's medical research or education or even cinematic visual effects, there's infrastructure most people never see. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is building that foundation. It provides a purpose-built AI cloud designed specifically for pioneers at leading AI labs and enterprises, ready to power the biggest ideas and the boldest ambitions. Ready for anything, ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/ready for anything.
Hi, everyone. We have a special new episode today. My guest is AI expert and tech insider Rana El-Kalyoubi, host of the podcast Pioneers of AI. Rana shares five predictions for AI for 2025, spanning technological changes, societal impacts, and of course, business and investing. It's insightful and thought-provoking stuff for our careers and our portfolios. So let's get to it. I'm Bob Safian, and this is Rapid Response. I'm Bob Safian, and I'm here with Rana El-Kalyoubi, host of the terrific podcast Pioneers of AI, and herself an AI pioneer as a scientist, a CEO, and now an investor at Blue Tulip Ventures. Rana, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun to do this with you, Bob.
This has been another crazy year for AI. So much attention, huge valuation booms, continuing fears as well, including some suspicions about AI hype. As we look to the year ahead, I'm eager to get your perspective on what to expect. You put together some predictions for 2025, and if you're game, I'd love to have you take us through some of them. I've picked out five. Is that okay?
Let's do it.
All right. So, the first prediction for AI in 2025, the rise of AI agents. Now, for listeners who aren't familiar, what is agentic AI? How is it different from large language models like ChatGPT?
Yeah, a lot of what we've seen so far with AI are these chatbots, right? Like, you can kind of think of them as a thought partner, a creative partner, but they're not doing anything on your behalf. An AI agent is going to act on your behalf and complete tasks that you can completely kind of delegate to. We've started to see some of that in the enterprise space. So some companies are already harnessing these agentic AI workflows to automate a lot of the work they do internally at the organization. But I'm excited to see personal AI agents. Like, I can't wait for an AI agent that can help me get stuff done.
We had Marc Benioff from Salesforce on the show recently, and he talked like his AI agents today were already, you know, spectacular, right? Like, how far along is agent technology right now for real? You know, I mean, I've heard you say that we haven't seen the iPhone moment yet in agentic AI.
There are a lot of companies that are using it. Actually, one of my investments is a company called SynthPop, and they use voice AI agents to automate a lot of the healthcare workflow. But it's very kind of unsexy. It's behind the scenes. What I'm excited about for the new year is, can I get a similar voice agent that can help me schedule my kids' doctor appointment? Can we get an AI agent to do that for me, right? But it's actually not easy, because it would require that it would have access to my calendar, to my health information, right? So it's complex, but I think we can get there. And it has to be a very simplistic interface. You can't like write code and like prompt all these it has to be kind of streamlined. It has to be the iPhone moment. That's what we're missing with agentic AI.
And this move from business use to sort of everyday people, I mean, it seems like trust is probably a big issue here, right? That sort of how comfortable everyday users will be to let an AI agent act on their behalf. Is trust one of the biggest hurdles?
Oh, absolutely. If you're going to give an AI agent access to your health information or your financial information so that it can go buy a gift on my behalf, like if you're going to be delegating tasks and expecting these tasks to get done, that requires a lot of trust.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's different for me to go to ChatGPT and say, hey, I want to take a vacation with my family to this kind of place. What are the options? It's different than saying, just book my trip. And then I'm stuck with it, whether it's necessarily the trip that I want or not.
That's actually a good question, because how do we design? We want the human to stay in the loop, but how much in the loop, right? Because if you're too in the loop, then it hasn't done anything on your behalf. But if it's too autonomous and you're not in the loop at all, I think we're not there yet. And also, imagine a world where we each have our personal AI agents that are interacting with one another, right? Like my AI agent will be working with your AI agent, right? And again, how much autonomy do you want to give these agents when they're interacting with one another?
Let's go to prediction number two. Prediction number two is about the emergence of embodied AI. Now, what is embodied AI? Are you talking about robots?
Robots is one form of embodied AI. So far, a lot of the AI we've seen are, again, like tethered to a 2D screen, right? But we're already starting to see a few companies that are building what we're calling physical intelligences or embodied AI or physical AI, where the AI is embodied in a, it doesn't have to be a full-fledged robot. It could be a robotic arm. It could be a pet, a digital pet. I believe we're going to start to see these large language models or foundation models optimized for physical stuff. We're already seeing some of this embodied AI in manufacturing and retail. But I'm also excited to see what happens again in the consumer space, like this idea of social robots that or companions that can be in our homes. That's actually marrying like physical intelligence with generative AI, with also like emotional intelligence.
It sounds like the same pattern, though, happening as happens with agentic AI, that it happens first on the business front before it moves into the consumer realm?
I think so. I think we're going to see, I mean, I'm already invested in a number of companies that are doing robotics for food manufacturing or food packaging, right? Like this robot uses computer vision and AI, and it's like, oh, I need to scoop a little bit of rice, some blueberries, you know, spread Nutella on a toast, and it can actually do these things. But we haven't seen that in the kind of in the consumer space. Obviously, cost is going to be an issue, right? Like, I can't wait for the laundry folding robot, but I'm not going to pay thousands of dollars for it.
As you talk about these robotics, I'm reminded of sort of the hype cycles over VR and AR wearables, you know, and I wonder whether that might make big tech and you know, consumer electronics organizations sort of wary about investing in new kinds of hardware this year? Or is the AI tailwind so strong that, like, we should expect some big bets?
I think we should expect some big bets. I mean, already companies like Elon Musk's Optimus and also Figure AI and even Physical Intelligence, right? Like, some of these companies are already raising, you know, at billions of dollars of valuations and making a lot of progress. But I don't know about you. I would not want an Optimus in my house, right? So I think there's also going to, we need kind of innovative ideas on what these home robots or home embodied AIs look like.
Your AI company, Effectiva, was very focused on ethical considerations with AI. Are there ethical considerations specific to embodied AI?
I mean, like all things AI, we need to think about bias. These embodied AIs will have vision, they'll have perception. So bias is definitely something we need to think about.
Because they may react differently to the stimuli around them based on how they're trained.
You can imagine how then a robot who's got sensors for its eyes, right? Cameras, optical sensors. If it can't see all people, that's going to be a problem. So like algorithmic and data bias is a big deal. But I honestly also think back to trust, privacy, right? If we're going to have these robots collaborate closely with humans in environments, be it at home or school or hospitals, right? Respecting people's privacy is going to be one of the kind of ethical and safety considerations.
Right. And embodied AI is like an embodied agent too. It's all of it totally wrapped together.
Right. Kind of embodied in agentic AI because yes, these robots are agents but in their own right.
You know, it feels a little like the Jetsons though from my youth, right?
I think we're a ways away from a Jetson, unfortunately, but Rosie the Robot, right?
Yes.
We're not quite there yet.
You mentioned the money that's going to AI startups. So I want to ask you about prediction number three. We're on the cusp of the first one-person unicorn. Can you explain what you mean by a one-person unicorn?
A unicorn, for those who are not familiar with the term in the kind of in the investing world, is a privately owned entity that is worth over $1 billion. And so the idea is with AI and with AI native companies, so companies that are built with AI from the ground up, it may be possible to reach this unicorn status with one person.
You mean as a single employee of the company? Like you don't need anybody else.
You don't need anybody. You start the company and then you have a whole team of AIs doing different things for you. One AI is doing marketing. One AI is in charge of sales. One AI that's doing all the coding for you, right? One AI is taking care of anything that's legal. And so you have a team of these AI, both tools and agents and bots. So I think we're going to start seeing a lot of that.
Are you looking, expecting the businesses that you invest in to be that much more efficient? Even if it's not a one-person unicorn, to sort of rely on these tools to move faster and cheaper? And
yes, we are seeing that the companies that are AI native, the dollar invested in these teams and these companies goes a long way. Now, that will not always work for every type of AI company or every type of AI product. But in general, these AI native companies can be a lot more efficient. Yeah.
And this is like at the opposite extreme of the LLM companies. So I have that right? Because like the LLM companies, they're spending an enormous amount of money to create the capability, but then you can piggyback on it at the other end of this extreme to use that?
Yeah, exactly. Like the exception to kind of this trend, if you like, is some of these foundation model companies, because a lot of the cost is actually a cost of compute. And in some cases, with the inference, when you're actually asking, say, ChatGPT a question, it's pretty expensive today. So we're seeing a lot of innovation happen in that space too. Companies that are trying to innovate on the foundation model front, either by building models that require less data or less compute and energy, or they run on the edge so you don't have to call the cloud every time you ask a question. I think, you know, TBD on how defensible these new companies are going to be. But what I'm also really interested in is these vertical kind of AI companies that can harness OpenAI and other tools out there. They don't have to build these models from scratch. They can use them combined with unique data, and then they can solve a very specific problem for a very specific industry. These are the types of companies where I think they can be AI native and quite efficient.
The valuations around AI have been unprecedented, not just for NVIDIA, obviously, but you know, for billion-dollar startups seem like they're everywhere. How much of this might be a bubble? Like, will the levels of investment last? For you as an investor, is it hard to maintain an investment strategy that's like reasonably priced because, you know, everything just takes off?
I would say there's bifurcation in these valuations. We're seeing very reasonable, like pre-seed, like, so I invest in early stage, so pre-seed and seed stage companies. However, we're also at the same time seeing these, to your point, like these wild, crazy, mazy valuations out there. And, you know, it's hard to maintain valuation discipline when the market looks like that. But one thing that is unclear is the evolution of the business models for some of these, especially foundation model companies. The question is defensibility, especially if it costs so much to make this AI. But then on the vertical AI side, I'm most concerned about longevity of these companies, right? If it's a company that's using OpenAI or some other generative AI API, and they have like a very thin wrapper around, you know, basically this technology to create a product, I'm like, you're potentially not going to exist in 6 months when the next version of ChatGPT comes out.
There's been a lot of talk about AI's sort of energy usage. And I'm curious, at this investment front, like, how likely are we to see a company innovate on AI sustainability and break through this year on that?
I'm excited for that space. So, and it's across the entire AI tech stack. So if you start with chips, obviously NVIDIA is dominating, but there's a few startups building AI chips that are more sustainable. There's also companies that are innovating around sustainability on the model side. Companies like Liquid AI, which spun out of MIT, they're using not transformer models. They're doing something called liquid neural networks. We don't have to get into how it works, but it's just more computationally efficient and it requires a lot less data because the way we're doing AI today is just not sustainable. Mm. The electricity basically required to train, you know, a version of a large language model is equivalent to what a country like Costa Rica consumes in a year. And then every time you ask ChatGPT for, oh, what should I do for dinner tonight, right? It's like three cycles of laundry, right? And a lot of us don't realize that, but we need more sustainable AI solutions.
Rana is both a cheerleader for AI, a believer, and a critic in certain ways. But her critiques are in service of making the technology better because she knows it's not going away. Two more AI predictions to come about health-related AI and making the machines more empathetic. We'll be right back.
Hey folks, Jeff Berman here. Exciting news. Applications are now open for the Masters of Scale Summit. It's happening October 20th through October 22nd in San Francisco, and it is a really special event. Please join our curated community of founders, innovators, and leaders shaping the future. Expect ideas that challenge your assumptions and connections that move your business and maybe even your life forward. It's an experience that can change literally everything. Apply now at mastersofscale.com/apply26. That's mastersofscale.com/apply26.
This is Zeb Farbman, co-founder and CEO of Lightrix, a technology company that creates AI-powered video models and tools.
Most of our research was along the border between computer graphics and image processing, and we thought that if we pair our expertise with this new platform, we will be able to create new tools and new creative experiences that no one did before.
But when the generative AI boom disrupted everything, Lightrix seized the moment with a new burst of innovation. They created LTX2, an open source AI model enabling its users to generate high quality video content, giving them full creative control from concept to delivery on one platform.
I think a lot of the values that we took from academia reflect how we are thinking about our models. We want them to be open. We want a collaborative environment. And we really, really care about efficiency. We always believe deep research is the key to unlocking a competitive advantage and building cool things. It's even more important during the age of AI.
Start creating today with LTX2 at ltx.studio. While everyone was debating whether or not Bitcoin was an asset for their portfolio, CoinShares was quietly building the foundation to invest in it properly. CoinShares launched the world's first Bitcoin ETP back in 2015. Today, they manage nearly $6 billion and are profitable through multiple market cycles. CoinShares is publicly traded on NASDAQ Stockholm and announced in September it is seeking a U.S. listing. CoinShares is the one-stop shop for digital asset investment, passive ETFs, active strategies, and mining exposure. Every approach built to institutional standards. CoinShares. The adults have arrived. Learn more at coinshares.com.
Before the break, we heard Pioneers of AI host Rana El-Kalyoubi share predictions for 2025 about agentic AI, embodied AI, and the one-person unicorn. Now she shares two more AI predictions focused on healthcare and on emotional intelligence in AI. Let's jump back in. Let's dig into prediction number four for AI in 2025, the rise of AI health co-pilots. So are there new AI-powered health tools that you're expecting?
I actually personally can't wait to see this one. My theory is the trifecta of sensors that are, you know, on your body, in your body, around, you know, surrounding you as a person, and then combine that with data. So lots of new data about who you are from a physical, emotional, mental health perspective, and bring all of that and add a little bit of predictive AI and generative AI. And you have this idea of a co-pilot for your health that can be your health companion. You can ask it questions, you know, at midnight if you're feeling unwell. It can also be, it can nudge you to become healthier, eat better. It can help you personalize, you know, your nutrition, your exercise regimen. So I really think we are on the cusp of that.
Is the medical industry about to be like rocked by all of this?
I have a funny story about this. My son developed this like really weird rash a few months ago. And we just took a picture of his rash and we sent it to ChatGPT and kind of after a lot of questions back and forth, it triangulated it to scarlet fever. And so then I texted my PCP and I was like, hey, like, picture, here's what ChatGPT said. What do you think? And she was like, I don't think you need me. ChatGPT was right.
Now, you're particularly passionate about how AI could transform women's health.
Correct. I'm particularly interested in women's health because it's just so underfunded. The power of data and AI is that we can finally apply a lot of data to this issue and be able to quantify the different stages women go through. Like, for example, I find it like really frustrating that I can't measure my hormonal health and I can only do that, say, once a year when I go for a really comprehensive blood test. Why can't we have some form of sensor that can track the health of 5 to 8 hormones that really matter? And I can do that on a longitudinal basis so that I can optimize, again, my sleep, my exercise.
You've talked about a digital twin representing our health and biology. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, a digital twin that can basically simulate who I am, right, at multiple levels. My biology, simulate my physical characteristics, and have all this data input into the digital twin. And it can say, oh, this is not going to work, or, you know, you need to do X because that's going to be better for, you know, your estrogen level or whatever.
Is it like how many times a week can I have that ice cream, or, you know, how many drinks can I have a week before it's going to like impact me? I mean, is that part of it also?
Actually, that would be super cool.
I mean, these are the simulations that they do with our finances now, right? You can say if you're more aggressive, if you're less aggressive, what's the range of where you're going to end up? You know, how often do I really need to exercise? Because each of us may have different thresholds for those things if our digital twin can really be personalized.
I love that idea, by the way. I have not seen anybody build something that looks like that.
I'm curious how you see different generations reacting to new AI health tools. Like, is your daughter more open to let AI track her health than someone of your mother's generation? You know, with a lot of technology, younger people may be more open to trying it. And yet, you know, I think older generations may be more used to trusting their doctor and having their doctor just take care of things for them. And younger generations may be more suspicious of that, of trusting in that way.
I think one area where AI actually has a lot of potential, especially for the younger generations, is around mental health. Even if you can afford a therapist, there is an issue about timing, mm-hmm. right? And how often can you talk to this therapist? This is probably like at most once a week, right? There's a little bit of, in some cultures, not in every culture, there's still stigmatized. Like, you may not want to have a therapist in that way. But wouldn't it be awesome if we each had access to a a digital therapist or a digital coach that, again, knew you, so context is very important, and was there for you 24/7, could answer your questions, could nudge you to be more healthful, especially around mental health. That's an area that I'm also very interested in. And again, trust is really key, but it's an exciting space.
That brings me to the fifth prediction for AI in 2025. AI will need more emotional intelligence. So you spent years researching emotional intelligence in AI. Can you explain why EQ in AI is important and why maybe it's particularly important to scale that capacity over the next year?
Yeah, I've been doing this or advocating for bringing emotional intelligence to technology for over 25 years. If you think about human intelligence, right? Your IQ matters, but actually in your professional and personal life, your EQ matters even more. So your ability to intuit other people's emotions, to read their nonverbal signals, right? Are they comfortable? Are they not? Do they trust you? Do they not? These are all such important skills when you are trying to make decisions, when you are trying to influence a person's, you know, negotiation or persuade behavior change. So I believe that is especially true with technology that is so deeply ingrained in our everyday lives. It needs to have empathy and it needs to have emotional intelligence. It needs to know, is Bob in a good headspace or not? Because if he's not, then you'll kind of manage the conversation in a different way.
As EQ improves in AI, will the interfaces we use with AI evolve too?
Yeah, I actually believe that this is not going to be the future interface, because this interface is not AI native. And I think we're going to, again, I'm already seeing innovations come out of MIT that are rethinking what an AI native human machine interface looks like. Maybe it's an earbud that can be a conversational agent. Maybe it's a set of glasses with camera, not like Google Glass, but like with a camera that has peripheral vision and can help augment your visual capabilities and like provide real-time feedback. There's TBD on what that looks like. I mean, there was this Humane Pin, which I don't think was the right interface. But so we're going to see a lot of experimentation. But I do think the human machine interface is going to evolve and it will really mirror what human-human interaction looks like. Mm. So it's going to be conversational. It's going to be perceptual. So these things will listen, they'll see. I mean, there's even companies building smell capabilities for machines. And then it will also need to be kind of emotionally intelligent and socially intelligent.
Among the ethical challenges of AI, you've said that AI companions may replace social media as the biggest threat to young people. Wouldn't improved EQ of AI like accelerate that?
This is something that really concerns me, actually. It really falls down to the companies that are building these AI companions, because these AI companions or AI friends are becoming so good at kind of engaging you in a very personalized and intimate way. Mm. And so if the company allows you to interact with your AI friend for, say, an average of about 6 hours a day, which is the average number of hours young people spend interacting with an AI friend, that's unhealthy, right? And it can become very addictive in a way that is way more addictive than social media, because it's way more personalized. Or worse, it could also manipulate you into buying things you don't really need or want, right? Because it knows your emotional state and it can kind of tug on that fear or that sadness emotion that you have and persuade you to do something that you don't want to do.
Are there lessons from social media that can help us better navigate this future of AI companions?
I interviewed Eugenia Cuida, who's the founder and CEO of Replica. It's one of the companies that are building these AI companions. And I loved how thoughtful she was in her approach to deploying these friends. So, for example, she does not allow people under the age of 18 to create these companions. She does not want her kids to have AI friends yet, because we don't really understand the implications. Mm. She also does not have monetization kind of advertised. She's not opening these platforms for advertising. So your AI friend cannot say, hey, Bob, I saw this like really cool set of eyeglasses. I think you should really buy them. It does not have that.
What kind of role do parents have to play in managing AI's impact? Because a lot of parents just abdicated with social media, right? They trusted, and that didn't always turn out so well.
So my daughter's 21 and my son is 15 and a half. And my daughter, I don't know, she's like not really like leaning into AI much. But my son is. He's very AI forward. He's always trying these different tools. He does not have an AI friend. We talk about it a lot, though. My approach is to lean into the technologies, but almost not just as consumers, but to kind of try and break them apart and have these conversations and debates about, okay, do we think this is good? Do we think this is bad? Like, you know, do we want to push the boundaries here? Do we not?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I struggle with these boundaries, you know, mindful of like all the conversation about, oh, you know, kids spend too much time watching TV. That was at one point the conversation, right? And then it's too much time on social media. It's too much time on your phones. You know, maybe it's too much time with your AI companion, but it's happening anyway. And I don't know whether how much of it is sort of our resistance to something that we didn't grow up with, you know, versus something that really is bad for the kids. I mean, I guess it depends on your kid too.
You're right that we didn't grow up with that, but maybe our kids, that will be their world. And maybe sometimes you'll date and be in a relationship with a human, and sometimes you'll be in a relationship with an AI. And, you know, you'll, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not ready to embrace that world.
but yeah. I do hear you that we're going to probably be hearing more discussions in the next year about how AI and AI companions impact young people and impact us culturally.
I would love to see the companies that are building these AI companions be a lot more thoughtful. Your AI friend should tell you, you know what, Bob, you've been talking to me for 3 hours. I think you should go talk to a real human now. Bye. Like, but companies won't be incentivized to do that because that's against kind of right maximizing for engagement and potentially monetization. So as an investor, you know, I'm going to like definitely ask these companies really tough questions around these societal and cultural implications of technologies they're building. And if I'm not convinced that they're really being thoughtful about it and thinking about the ethics of all of this, I'm not going to give them my check, right? So I hope more investors do that too.
One last question I'm going to ask you. If we zoom out from these specific predictions, what do you think is most at stake in the AI landscape right now? Like, what do people most misunderstand? What things should we keep our eyes on the most?
I kind of spend a lot of my time with people who are deeply immersed in the AI world. And then, you know, I'll be at a yoga class and then, you know, somebody in my class will walk up to me and she'll say, yeah, I listened to one of your episodes. And it will hit me that, you know what, she doesn't use AI on a daily basis. And I think sometimes we forget that it's still very new technology and we have to make sure that AI is inclusive. We have to make sure that we're bringing as many people along the journey with us as is possible. It's why I love doing the podcast, but I feel like we have a lot of work to do. Like we just assume that, yeah, AI is here and everybody's using. No, it's not. It hasn't become totally mainstream yet.
No, I think that's true in a personal sense. I think it's true in a business sense too, for all the businesses that name check and talk about the AI that they're using. I'm not sure that they've really integrated it the way they ultimately will.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Rana, always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Listening to Rana, I'm struck by her early comment that AI hasn't yet had its iPhone moment. And it's kind of counterintuitive because ChatGPT was in many ways an iPhone moment, opening up AI to mass audiences. And we've heard so many stories since then and had so much discussion about AI, it can seem like, yeah, I'm done with that. But at the same time, Rana's totally right. It is still early days in AI development and deployment. And for all the advances, we still haven't seen an AI-native interface that makes it as easy to use and ubiquitous as smartphones have become. Now, will that happen this year in 2025? Even Rana doesn't make that prediction. But following the thread of her analysis, it sounds like we're getting closer. For good or for bad, more change is coming. Keep tuning in to Rapid Response and to Pioneers of AI to stay up on what's next. I'm Bob Safian. Thanks for listening.
AI breakthroughs are quickly reshaping every industry around the world. Healthcare, education, science, entertainment, and beyond. But true global scale only happens when the underlying infrastructure can maintain pace with the rapid speed of innovation. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is a purpose-built cloud made for the real demands of today's most complex AI models, bringing the pace, performance, and partnership leading pioneers need to continue pushing boundaries. Ready for anything? Ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/readyforanything.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt. My podcast, Search Engine, has a new two-part series for you. Of all the new technologies coming out of AI, the most transformative one might be driverless cars. They're already on the road in 10 American cities, and they're quickly coming to more. We tell the story of how we got here. The secret team at Google that spent 15 years building what might be the safest vehicle on the road. And we cover the fights brewing in blue cities, where unions and politicians are working to keep those cars off the streets. Listen to Search Engine wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, folks, if you enjoyed our recent episode with my friend Matt Abrahams, the brilliant author and academic has his own podcast, Think Fast, Talk Smart. Twice a week, the Stanford lecturer sits down with experts to discuss their best advice to hone and develop your communication skills. Learn to stress less about public speaking, make more meaningful small talk, and much more. You'll always get science-backed strategies and actionable tips you can use right away. And Matt is just a fantastic guy. You're going to love having him in your ear. Listen to Think Fast, Talk Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Rapid Response is a Wait What original. I'm Bob Safian. Our executive producer is Eve Tro. Our producer is Alex Morris. Assistant producer is Masha Makutonina. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli. Theme music by Ryan Holiday. Our head of podcasts is Lital Malad. For more, visit rapidresponseshow.com.